podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
What goes O-O-O? Santa walking backwards. Because it's Christmas time. And it's a Christmas gag. That's the biggest groan we've had from a joke for quite a long time.
We're sat together for this one, and Beretta and I just looked at each other with a pained expression on our face.
It was pretty pained. Usually on Zoom, you can't quite make out the pain, but in real life, the pain was pretty telling.
Now, what's pretty disappointing about that joke for me, Nate, is that before we started recording, you were flicking through your joke list on your notes on your phone, and you were giggling to yourself, and you were pretty pleased with yourself. So I was expecting something pretty special, and while I love the Christmas theme, the quality
was poor.
Well,
I was actually laughing at another joke for another episode, because I've got a whole list, and I was laughing at one that will feature very soon.
Hang on, so why have you delivered one that isn't funny?
We're sat at Medland's house. We've got a Christmas tree right here. I was feeling festive. I don't have a Christmas tree up in my flat.
Oh, wow.
Well, because who's going to see it? Just me. And it's just going to annoy me that it's there. Yeah, I've got to put it up.
Why is it going to annoy you? You've just said seeing nice. One has made you feel festive.
Yeah, that's nice. But, like, I don't want to put one up. Like, you know, I'm going home for Christmas in, like, a day. So it'll just be sat there, you know.
Until you're back, and then you can enjoy it.
And I've got to take it down. Yeah, then I've got to take it down. No one will have seen it.
It can stay up until January the 6th.
Is that the official
that's
day?
That's the day when you take it down.
Yeah, 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah. I just don't put them up. But that's why. But I like when other people have. You know, there's presents under the tree, there's lights, you know. Santa would come here, definitely.
If someone did it for you.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
There you go.
There must be companies.
I just don't put it myself.
There must be companies that do that.
Well, you're right. That would be quite a good idea, wouldn't it? Are you too lazy to put up your tree? too much of a Scrooge? I'm not really a Scrooge. I like Christmas, but I just don't get that into the swing of it.
Okay. Well, what I feel like...
So maybe if I had been more Christmassy, that joke would have landed.
Maybe.
I would have told it with a bit more festive cheer.
Yeah, it might be your fault.
Yeah, maybe. Do you think?
Probably. Okay. Usually is.
Well, I want you to quit stalling, Nate, because I know you're afraid of the
We've
score,
already used the word
you?
Disappointing, so I'm worried about it.
Okay, I'm going to give it... And it pains me to give a kind of score like this. 4.5.
Ooh.
I knew it would dip under 5. As soon as you reacted like that, I was like...
It had to go under 5. It wasn't the worst you've ever told. So that's something,
yeah,
I suppose?
I think I definitely have had a 1 before. which was one of the worst jokes ever told.
I feel like you should have delivered that more festively and been like, four calling birds, 0.5 gold rings. Should have been how you did
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the 4.5th day of Christmas, that's your, you told a bad joke or something like that. See, that would have worked.
No.
Oh, Nate.
If I had a tree up, this would have been at least a 6.
Well, welcome to another edition of the Padhawk, and this is a very special one because we're all together at Chris Medland's house, next to Chris Medland's tree.
Lovely tree.
Chris Medland's coffee table. You've got Nate Saunders, you've got Chris Medland, obviously, because it's Chris Medland's house. It
would be weird if Chris wasn't here.
But hang on, I was trying to build some tension.
Sorry.
I was very, very surprised to hear my name in full so many times at the start of this episode. It's very odd, it's very formal.
We'll revert back to Meadows from this point.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, fine. And you've got me, Lawrence Barreto, and we're going to be doing a little bit of chat today about Las Vegas, because we haven't done a Las Vegas episode, have we yet, guys?
No, this really does show how on top of things we are, that it's, the 20th of December, and we're now talking about a race that happened about five weeks ago.
But we've given it a big sell at this point. I think there's been 2 episodes where we've mentioned it, so I think we have to.
Yeah, but we've been busy, right? After Vegas, we went to Abu Dabi.
Nate went on holiday, but we'll get to that later.
And that's the only bit I think is worth talking about, because I don't remember anything from Abu Dhabi that was new. Oh, actually, no, there was something, so it's fine. It's all right. Don't worry about it. Don't mention it. It's all good.
We've done the ring story in the last episode.
No, not the ring story. The karting story.
Actually, that is quite good. As much as I hate karting stories, that is a good one.
Okay, well,
but we'll start with Vegas, right?
Let's start with Vegas,
because that is kind of, I guess, what the title of the episode is going to be.
What? Let's start with Vegas.
Let's start with Vegas.
It's almost as bad as your joke. We'll come up with something else. Something more cliche, because nobody used any cliches in Vegas. That was the real beauty of that week.
That was one thing I wanted to start with. It was a bit like how every time we go to Austria, someone sends a press release out, being like, the hills are alive with the sound of F1 engines.
Yeah.
And you almost play bingo. You're like, one of them's going to do it. One of them's, I think Alpine did it this year. Always. And then as soon as one's done it, you can tell the other team's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Can't use that now. You know?
Rewrite.
Yeah, but all the teams had Vegas kind of puns in there, which I suppose makes sense. But also, Vegas isn't the city that never sleeps, is it? That's New York.
Yeah.
And everyone kept using that, like, oh, it's the city that never sleeps.
I mean, it's true, it doesn't.
It doesn't sleep.
That's not its nickname.
Yeah. It's Sin City, isn't it, is the main nickname. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that was weird as a start. Anyway, that's Vegas done. Vegas thoroughly reviewed. What do you guys think?
Well, Lawrence has looked to me because he's got to be very careful because as Formula One's official spokesperson, as we regularly mention on this pod.
You might not hear much of Barreto for the next 10 minutes.
No comment.
It started, actually being there, it started well because got there, on a Monday and had some fun, basically. Just trying to beat jet lag, went and played Topgolf. This is a good story, right? Went and played Topgolf, which obviously everyone knows Nate loves, everybody loves. But we were... like stood there playing, and as you looked out, you got the end of the driving range, you got a load of big screens, and behind it you had the pit building. It was that close. Like the track ran right past the end of the Topgolf setup, which means I think they called the final corner Topgolf on the actual track map. But then we walked back through the MGM, which is where I was staying, and we thought we'll go to maybe look at some tables, and people were saying, well, can we play any roulette? Do we know what we're doing? And as you walked through, genuinely, on your left-hand side, you had Logan Sargeant playing craps. And on your right-hand side, you had Nico Hülkenberg watching blackjack. And I'm not kidding, they were about 3 yards apart. So anyone who was walking through a casino that night would have walked straight past two F1 drivers. And that's 10% of the grid were there, like within 3 yards of each other in a casino.
Some ESPN colleagues of mine later in the week just went and had a bit of a flutter, and they saw Carlos Sainz on a table, and they were playing roulette. So I don't know how much they put down, but they said, let's put everything I have on red. And it came up, and they like tripled their money. No way. So the drivers
doubled it.
He's probably doubled it, actually.
Yeah.
So maths was never my strong suit.
Nate knows the rules.
All Christmas jokes. Christmas jokes, putting trees up, and maths. Don't go there. But yeah, so I think the drivers were, when they could, just kind of trying to experience that, which is kind of fun. And Sargeant was funny, wasn't he? Because he saw all of us, kind of recognized a few, and was like, I think for a second he thought, is this going to get out that I'm here?
Like, is it a bad thing?
Yeah, is it a bad thing I'm here? And I, if we didn't talk, but I would have gone up to him and just said, we're not going to mention it because we're here too. Like, it's a perfectly normal thing to do in Vegas.
Yeah, but I've just mentioned
you've
it.
You just mentioned
well, no,
it.
You've also said that Hülkenberg and Sainz.
Like, it was normal for people to do it.
I think when you're a rookie driver and you're doing Vegas and you're suddenly seen by some journalists at a table, you must, the first thing you think, I mean, and this was 2 days before the...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the day before.
So it wasn't like the night of the race or anything.
Yeah.
So, but your first thought in your head must be, you say, what was he playing?
Craps.
Probably what went through his head, am I right?
Hey.
Without the S.
But then he went and qualified sixth. So clearly, gambling helps him perform in qualifying.
True.
Yeah.
Obvious, yes, clearly. Yes.
Maybe he used to do it every week. Yeah, maybe that's the thing.
Let's get a casino in the paddock. But so that was funny, I thought, and cool. And we went and explored as well. So everyone was doing that because you've just got to Vegas. Like, let's do Vegas things. Plus, you had to get your body clock onto the time zone, which was impossible.
Because which was the hardest part.
Well, it was like, so what was Vegas? 8 hours normally. But then with the schedule, it was another 5 or 6 on top of that. I want to say 6. And because of the direction you've gone in terms of travel, it was, I don't want to say easier, but what made sense was to stay up late, was to try and push your body clock back, even though technically you were closer if you went the other way and got up early, and or like earlier and earlier. It was really bizarre trying to do that. That was hard. But I did the Netflix Cup thing. It was really cool.
That looks great.
More golf, Nate. You'll be delighted. More golf.
Well, I was going to gloss over it for him. I felt like an important point, so I was just racing.
I don't mind a bit of golf chat. It's fine.
Didn't Pierre Gasly almost hit you in the face with a golf ball?
Yeah, that was really good because Jess is telling me that I need to do TikTok more.
I was going
to
say it restarted your TikTok career,
and that got, I don't know, like 40,000 views on my TikTok channel.
Cool.
Everybody, all three listeners, go and look at my TikTok channel. I was joking around the whole time. I was recording bits for our radio shows on Sirius XM, which we never actually used in the end. But I was pretending to be like a golf reporter. So I was like, oh, and it's Norris on the 6th tee. It's quite a 6-iron. Slight left to right wind. That sort of thing. Like, I was really enjoying it. It was good.
Mate,
fun.
If F1 ever doesn't work for you, that's your calling right there.
But then I was also slagging them off because they couldn't hear me. It was great. Great fun. And I was doing that with Gasly because he was taking a long time over every shot. Like a long time.
And they were on the clock, right? They were doing
pretty much.
It was whoever could finish quickest. Or was that a different game?
That was a different game. But it was that they had to do... They had obviously floodlights set up because it was going to get dark. But they didn't want it to get too dark or take too long. And because Gasly was in the second group playing with Albon, you had Norris against Sainz in the first group, which more people were following, I will admit, because of that bromance. But also, once that finished, like, they could go at their own speed and they finished quicker. And then Gasly was playing a lot slower. So the gap between the two groups got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. So everyone was waiting around for the second game to finish so they could do the final. And I'd been told this, that a few people were saying, like, the production team are going to have to say to him, look, can you hurry up the way you play? So I was making that point, and I said that he, you know, is quite slow hitting a golf ball, and then he hit it, that exact shot straight at me.
He's just started playing golf, though, isn't he? Of all of the players that played that day, Formula One drivers, he's only just started. And I remember, I think he went to play that course the day before with James Lloyd, who's a press officer at Alpine, to just try and get... kind of get his eye in, I guess.
Unfair advantage.
Yeah, just like Nigel Mansell, you went and did a helicopter ride around the Top Gear track before he did his lap in the Suzuki. What was it, Liana?
Liana, yeah.
That's a great
which is a very niche reference to Top Gear in the UK. But yeah, so he wanted to make sure he kind of gave a good account of himself, and then he almost hit Chris Medland in the face.
Which would have been a video.
It would have been a great account of himself as well, wouldn't it, to be fair?
Yeah, it would.
I think many people would have enjoyed that.
The funny thing with that is, and I forget who said, one of the drivers said they were more nervous teeing off for that than they have been. Or they were, maybe it was Lando, kind of jokingly, but you almost feel like because they're so comfortable racing, when they actually do something like that, they're out of their comfort zone. So him taking a long time is like, oh, there's actually cameras on me watching. I can't mess this up.
He doesn't want to look bad.
Whereas when they're in the car and they always say, like, when the visor goes down, we don't think about anything. That is so normal to them to be in that environment. So to suddenly put them in that situation, I think it's quite interesting because they suddenly like, oh, like the competitive juice is still there, but it's the fear of failure they'll have is much bigger. Even though it's a fun game, they don't want to be the guy that finishes last because to them it's a thing they'll think about.
Albon said that, yeah, beforehand.
I think that's who I'm thinking of in the interview session.
And he didn't have his clubs either, so he'd gone to get his clubs to fly them out there, so he was playing with his own clubs because he was like, yeah, that's going to be important too. And everyone was meant to bring their own stuff. And for some reason, the ones he had were like junior clubs or the ones he'd found or he got. So they were far too short. And he said he measured them against Lily's. And found her even shorter than hers.
With Lily being there as well, he must have thought, I've really got to do well.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, she was not caddying, but she was walking around with, I think, some family members and friends and stuff and giving him feedback. And also he was saying, did you see this? Did you see that? What was good? What was bad? And there was a few times that you could see she was a bit like, yeah, that was bad. But a lot of it, actually, you know, he was pretty solid. But then I think they were tied to the last hole and he lost on the last hole to Gasly. And then Carlos won it, didn't he? Sainz and Johnson.
And then broke the trophy.
Yeah.
Dropped the trophy, which subsequently broke the trophy.
This is what was funny about Vegas, this event, and I'll talk about what I did the following day, was that that event started early afternoon.
Yeah.
Then media day was similar. I feel like that was the biggest thing that was, so Meadows was completely right to mention, I felt like it was a bunch of people from Europe going to Vegas, which is 8 hours behind, but trying to get onto Japanese time, effectively, because it was like a Japanese or an Australian Grand Prix race start. And yet, all the events leading up to it were kind of done on Vegas time. You know, were kind of done in line with, this is the afternoon now. So a lot of people had got up at kind of midday, late morning, because especially with the jet lag, you'd probably been up quite early. So it meant that by the time the sessions kind of started on the Thursday, your body was just completely out of whack because you'd been up early the day before. You were trying to sleep later to kind of accommodate, and so when you left the circuit especially after that first day, I mean, I felt horrendously ill on that. Well, I'm getting all the days mixed up. The Thursday when we had the practice sessions, I actually went home early that day. I had a horrible cough. Everyone sitting around me in the media center was looking at me like, I don't want you to stay here, Nate. But
that's
everybody
not cough specific, just
that happens most weeks, but this one they blamed it on the cough. But I feel like by Thursday, and like as the weekend went on, most people were just absolutely ruined. It wasn't so much I think the changing for the race was one thing, but all the events leading up to it kind of started as if Vegas time was as if the race was starting at like 3 p.m. You know what I mean? And that is a big thing. And I think some of the drivers felt that as well.
While we focus on the cool points then, because that's about where my fun ended. And I know you've got a very cool story.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make everyone wait for it. Beretta, what was the coolest thing you did or had to do in Vegas?
I did a few cool things. So while Medland, on the day that Medland went to, you did the Netflix golf, I stayed in bed much longer because I'd come from Australia. So I was on the right time zone for what we were supposed to do, because I was then going to do a track tour video guide with Nicole Briscoe from ESPN. And Nate colleague, of course.
Yep. Shout out to Nicole.
And so I didn't start shooting until like 7, 8 o'clock in the evening through to like 3 or 4 a.m., to be fair.
Oh, yeah, because you needed a sharp road, didn't you, for that?
Yeah, exactly that. But also needed to be dark to show Vegas. So it was quite cool to get a chance. We'd gone there a year, 18 months or so beforehand when Vegas was just Vegas, and we just announced that the track was going to happen. So it was quite cool to then just go back, walk around, see what they'd done to it, see the sphere in action. Lots of people have talked about this giant golf ball, essentially, that had 1.2 million LEDs and could basically show any kind of visual effect that you wanted on. So it's quite cool to go and see what it was. But the best thing was going up to the 30th floor, I think it was, on the Cosmopolitan Hotel, which is on the final corner, isn't it? Or on the final sequence corners. And just seeing down the strip and seeing the view that essentially this Grand Prix was built on, which was to look down the 2 kilometres of track that runs down the strip and just seeing how cool it looked. And visually, it looked cooler seeing it in real life than it did on the telly. I think it just didn't quite come through. But I thought, this is why we're here. And I thought, oh, I'm pretty excited to be lucky enough to be here. So that was a pretty cool thing to do. And then the second thing is we did something slightly different on the day of the race. We had a red carpet laid out just inside the paddock gates. And they simulated it like a movie premiere. So they tried to encourage people to come down. The drivers and team principals, they weren't as excited. But it kind of worked from a celebrity perspective because there were so many celebrities there. So it was quite cool to do a Grand Prix weekend. And you guys know it's essentially the same format, isn't it, everywhere we go. So it was quite cool to do something a little bit different to the ordinary and just try and get a different kind of type of question you're asking or different kind of feel for an interview and stuff. So I enjoyed doing that. That was cool. But this story is topped by a billion times by what Nate's about to tell.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it's one of the few times I can top one of your stories because yours are always very good. So the day after the Netflix Cup, so the media day, which was Wednesday, leading into the event, a few weeks out, we spoke to Red Bull and they said they were doing what's called the Gran Turo. They called the Gran Turo event. It's basically like the Gumball Rally. You know, they're driving from LA through to Vegas, and Danny Ric was joining them for the final leg of that, which was from Death Valley to Vegas. So he was flying out there, and originally I was going to drive up with an ESPN crew. Last minute, we had just, there was so much going on that Wednesday, as you guys know. We had so many different things open up. It was like, I don't know if we can spare somebody to go with, you know, to go with ESPN. So we can't spare someone to go with Nate on the drive because they need to be filming stuff at the paddock. So we thought, oh, okay, and we looked at like different options. I didn't really fancy getting a 3-hour Uber from Vegas up to, especially something called Death Valley. I feel like that's the start of a true crime podcast.
You imagine if anyone actually would have done that as well, like when they have to turn around and drive back.
And also just me trying to justify the expense, like to ESPN. Like, what's this £1,000 Uber? Yeah, so I had to go to Death Valley. So we were trying to spitball some ideas, and this is where I shout out Paul Smith at Red Bull. So I messaged him and I was like, man, I'm really sorry, but you know, it's just so hectic this week. I'm not sure I can actually get to Death Valley tomorrow to join. And what we're going to do is going to have a bit of time in the car with Ricardo. He messaged back almost immediately and was like, what's your date of birth, your weight, and your full name? I was like, that's a weird response. But I kind of, my head...
Putting him in a boxing ring.
Yeah. Well, my head suddenly, I think, I didn't want to say it out loud, but I was like, I think I know where he's going with this. So I gave him the details. I dropped 10 kilograms off my weight, just because, you know, which I regretted the next day, as you'll find out why. He then said, I'm going to try and get you on the private jet that Ricardo's flying out in.
Cool.
So I was like, okay, that's amazing. Didn't think much of it. About 10 minutes later, Paul messaged me and said, you're on. I've got you a seat. So it was me, Ricardo, and his manager, Blake, who's a, you know, great guy. I know we all know him very well. And it was just bizarre. But again, to go back to the point about the time, I met them at 10 a.m. at their hotel. So we jumped in the car, which was funny. I was sat there with, you know, Ricardo and me in the backseat. He was just kind of, you know, talking to me about the times. And you could tell he wasn't too happy about how they'd scheduled it. He wasn't happy, for example, that his day basically was fly to Death Valley at 11 a.m. or 10 a.m., whatever time it was, drive across the country or across part of the state, get to Vegas, then do a whole day of media day, then try and sleep, then the next day do practice. You know, he was saying, you know, how ridiculous that was. And then before we know it, we get on this. It wasn't the private jet you're imagining. It was a prop plane. And it was funny because when I got there, Ricardo was like, have you been on one before? And I said, no, I've never been on one. And he was like, oh, can't wait for you to sit. And then he was really apologetic when they saw it was a prop plane. He's like, Nate, really sorry. This is still pretty damn cool. You know, but, and he joked, he was like, no, but like, a prop, you know, if you're lucky enough to get a proper jet. And he was talking to me about how how that actually works, you know, how you block out time with private jet companies and stuff, and why he prefers it, you know, just going to airports, just getting inundated with people. Yeah. So when you're in that headspace, you're trying to prepare. He said it saves you maybe a few hours either end. And he sometimes jumps in with Max, I know. But talking to me all about that. And it's really interesting. It's easy to kind of hear it and say, oh, it's a private jet. Like, you know, how easy is that? But for them, it's a huge deal just to be able to jump on a jet like that. And then we took off from a private airstrip, flew over Vegas, which was amazing. And we were kind of looking down over the city, which was, you know, early in the day, so you couldn't really make out all the lights and everything. But just a really cool thing. And I was just sat there and we were just kind of chatting off record for the whole thing. I say off record, we didn't even say like this is off record. We were just kind of talking about stuff. Probably the coolest thing I've ever done in an F1 week, because you get that environment where somebody's in their own space. Ricardo kept the whole flight, there was this hamper opposite him of snacks and little drinks and stuff. And there was this like, it was like a Pringles can, but of Oreos. And he kept looking at it and saying, like, does anyone want an Oreo? And I was like, no, I'm good. And Blake said, no, I'm good. About 10 minutes later, he's like, you sure you don't want an Oreo? And I said, do you want the Oreos? He's like, yeah, I really do. So in the whole flight, and as we landed at this, I mean, the whole flight over was amazing. That part of Arizona is just unbelievable, really. Sorry, Nevada. It's, I think, in Arizona, because that's where I went after. Because you got Vegas, and then suddenly just mountains, canyons. And we landed in Death Valley. Nobody there. There was just this little airstrip. We landed. It was, you know, 25-minute flight, so it wasn't super long, but had a just great. I mean, I've got photos. We can put them on the social account of what that was like. The funniest part was we landed on this airstrip, and Red Bull were meant to pick us up. We were meant to meet the convoy at this airport, and we didn't know they were running about 15 minutes late. They'd been held up just, you know, with a few things. So we get there. We thank the pilots. We get off. When I say there's no one at this airport, there is no one at this airport. There's not even somebody like, you know, there on like air traffic control or anything. It's literally a blank space. I think there was a guy who drove off when we got there, so I think he'd seen us in and driven off. So we get off the plane. Blake and me are looking at our phones. No signal. We're trying to.
Oh no.
We're in Death Valley. Remember that, Death Valley. And I'm like, there's a reason this place has got its name. Ricardo's got, you know, there's a Ricardo JPEG account. He was loving it. He was walking around just taking pictures. He said, this is like being in Australia, being out in the outback. He's like, if I could pick, I'd just live out somewhere like this all day. Me and Blake are like, well, how are we gonna get to Red?
We're gonna die here.
And I kept looking at the plane, and I was like, well, as long as the plane's still here, we're okay, because we've at least got our way back to Vegas. They started being like, are you guys all right? We're gonna head off soon. I was like, well, maybe just wait a few minutes until we find something. There was one path coming out, and we saw this person running down it. Sorry, this is a really long-winded story, and it makes more sense in my head. But
we're enjoying it. I was just having to reply to a message. But
we saw this person running down it, and now if anyone's seen any movie, you know if someone's running down a path, you should get the hell out of there. And we were looking, and Ricardo kind of came around the corner and was like, someone running down the path. Turned out it was just a lovely lady that's just her. An amazing running route. She says she runs into Death Valley and then just doubles back.
Wow.
She's like an ultra marathon runner. So we then decided, let's walk down this path. Because we said, she said there's like a welcome center at the top. We said, how far? It's like, it's about a mile up there. So before you know it, I'm walking down this kind of country road in the middle of Death Valley. And I've got Daniel Ricciardo on one side and then Blake on the other. And I was just laughing to myself because I was like, this is probably the most random thing that's ever happened to me. Probably, I don't think there's many journalists who could say, and we were just, and at this point, again, I'd kind of forgotten we were there for a media event. We were just kind of chatting about how ridiculous it was. And then we see this car coming down the same track. And by this point, we've walked about 5 minutes down it. And so we started joking. We were like, well, and I said to Ricardo, I said, well, the annoying thing here is if this person does come down and kill us all, the news will say Daniel Ricciardo Day. Won't name me. I'll be like fifth paragraph.
You'll be a footnote.
If lucky. You know, Blake will get mentioned. Blake was with his longtime manager, and there was a journalist with him. I was like, this story, this is not going to be about me. Luckily, it was Red Bull. They picked us up, and we did the event. We went straight for lunch. But yeah, just a really, really cool day. And actually spending time with a driver outside of the paddock and in that kind of environment. Especially a guy like, you guys both know what Danny Rick's like. Like, one of the best guys to spend time with just to talk to. So I think he's probably one of the most normal people. Yeah, it was really cool. And yeah, I'm just glad we didn't get brutally murdered in Death Valley.
Yes, me too.
But yeah, so that, and that wasn't even the media event. I mean, the media event itself was fairly standard. It was great being driven, got in a Mustang, got driven to the other end. Well, I was in the car for like 20 minutes. So didn't get a huge, there was a lot of other people there on the, you know, who had time with him. So, but yeah, just really cool day. But also, just sorry, because I've been talking for like 10 minutes. It does show you that sometimes the stuff these drivers do away from racing, because I did wonder, and I was talking to Blake afterwards, I was like, he kept saying to Red Bull, like, I don't want him driving at all from here to Vegas, which you can understand. You know, he's got to go and drive that weekend. They said, Nate, do you want to drive? And I was like, well, I haven't signed anything. As much as I'd love to drive, it's the middle of the desert, you know, I was like, I also don't want to drive an F1 driver. And then, because then you're responsible for them as well. So I was like, I don't want to. And Red Bull said, that's fine, because we didn't tell you were going to drive. But it does show you sometimes.
So hang on, so Danny Rick then had to drive?
He drove for a lot of it, yeah. And then Blake jumped in and drove him at the end.
So you forced him to drive and he didn't want to?
Well, that was the event. That's what it was. No one wants to watch a video.
That's his job.
Me being Roy Keane, but that's his job. No one wants to watch a video of me driving Danny Rick and us talking. You know, part of it was that. So, yeah. So I felt sorry for him in that sense, because I know he drove to the hotel that Red Bull were at was...
Did he go to Caesars Palace? He went to one of them, didn't he?
It wasn't MGM. Yeah, it was something. It wasn't Caesars, but it was another one of the really big ones.
Yeah.
Which is where we'd been picked up at the start of the day. And when they got there, Blake pulled up, got out of the car. Danny Rick got in the front seat, drove in. And then Christian, they did a whole video where he's like, oh, I hear you've driven all the way from Death Valley. And, you know, they did their thing. From there, he jumps in the car, goes to the circuit, does media day. So I was like, that's a full day.
And
especially,
on, isn't it?
As we're saying with the times, you know, of how much was expected of them later that week. Yeah, it was a lot. I've just realized I've spent, and I usually give Meadows a hard time for talking for a long time, but I've done exactly the same thing. So,
well, following up on that though, so Daniel then showed up very late for his media session
Nate.
How long it took.
Thank you.
yeah, sit down. but then, like you said, then you had the full day, and he was really apologetic and thankful for everyone for waiting and stuff. And I'm there thinking, what you said, that you'd already messaged us, hadn't you, being like, he's now got to go through a full day.
Yeah.
Whereas I think for some drivers, they all had to do similar. They were being asked to do things before media day started because it was daytime in Vegas. But you're right that we were then, we do all the interviews and they finish at, I don't know, 2 a.m. I think the last one was, something like that. And then, of course, you start writing. So it's 3 in the morning. And 3 in the morning was then, if I fast forward that to UK time, would have been 11 a.m. UK time. So you've basically stayed up all night and you're into the following day because of the time zone you're trying to get yourself onto as well. And that's when you have to sit and write in what was a windowless box of a room that was we had a terrible media center there, and trying to stay awake was so hard and to like write stuff that was coherent. So that was when it got challenging. This is the bit where I say after that, so everything had been fun. That would have been, I think it was still on Thursday earlier in the day, got to the track before practice, before everything went to pot basically for the day. And Jacques Villeneuve was getting married in the chapel they had there.
Yeah, I missed that because I came in because a quick tangent, I woke up and I was terrified the next day because I woke up with a horrible cough and I was like, oh my God, like, for a second I thought, well, maybe I've got like COVID or something. And I thought, if I had it yesterday, it's a good chance I've given it to Ricardo. So I messaged Paul and I was like, just so you know, I've got a bad cough. And he was like, okay, I'll keep it. Like, Ricardo was fine. But so I missed that because I just spent a few extra hours like just basically resting up. And then got in, everyone was like, you missed Phil Nurse's wedding. I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's not a sentence I ever thought I'd hear.
And it was, we got a message about it and went, sort of wandered down and was looking in and could see through the, cause it was like a big glass greenhouse almost. And I was like, this is bizarre. And then it was just like, yeah, you can come in. Like, anyone can come in and watch it. So I was like, okay. Walked in and found like other team members there with a glass of champagne. I say start of the day, it was like 8 p.m., but it was the start of our working day. And was like, this is utterly bizarre. And I was taking photos and just laughing, like, this is one of the weirdest things I've ever done. Almost, I'll admit, almost mocking it in the sense of, like, this is crazy. And then they came out and stood for everyone who was there to take a few photos in the area that we'd been watching from. And again, was kind of laughing at this, like, how, like, Vegas was already weird, but how I just watched Jacques Villeneuve get married. And then turn around and they're handing out cake in little bags. which I thought was really cute. I was like, oh, I feel bad now. They're giving this. And then when you left, they give you a bottle of champagne. Well, a bottle of Ferrari Trento.
Yeah. They'll love that you called it champagne.
Yeah, sorry. Sparkling wine.
This was it. I turned up in the paddock and everyone had Trento and Case. I was like, what did I miss?
Yeah, that was really surreal, but cool. And then it went to pot after that, didn't it?
Yeah, but that's what's cool about that is that is exactly what you expect from Vegas. It's something that's completely weird and
that's what they would have been hoping for, right? Yeah. When they whacked a chapel in the paddock, that you'd get a kind of story like that.
Yeah.
Quick one, just because I'm just bleeding this story dry, but on the back to Ricardo, and you said he was very apologetic when he showed up. One of the things that was very interesting on the jet was he actually spent about 5 minutes asking me, he said, so when you're at a race, like, what is your, like, walk me through it. What do you do on a Thursday, on a media day, as it was then, even though it was Wednesday? And I was like, well, here's what I would do, and, this is why, and I didn't labour the point about, I just said my job really is to find the best story, but there's so much happening, you go to one session, you're like, oh, maybe I'll transcribe that. And he was like, oh, that's interesting, because he's like, I always wonder, because there's so many people there, I'm like, does everyone write a story about me every week? And I was like, a lot of the time, especially when you've come back, and there was all those people in Hungary that year, I was like, absolutely, everyone wrote a story about you that week. And he said, and then some weeks I'll turn up with like three people there. I'm like, yeah, sometimes it just clashes. But it's interesting, because obviously from his perspective, he has no idea what we're doing. So I'm not saying he apologized because I said that to him, but it's clearly front of his mind. Like, I have just flown, privately and then driven across the desert. These guys are all here doing their job as well. So I think that's, again, just to go back to onto the Ricardo thing, one of the few drivers that has that empathy to actually ask you what you're doing. So basically what I'm saying is it was all down to me that he was apologetic and I gave him a new lease of life, basically, a new outlook on the media. So you can thank me later.
It's definitely down to you that he's apologising because he was late.
Yeah.
And he'd been on the event with you, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, because we nearly died in Death Valley. That's why.
And that would have been a story. They would have written that.
But you would have said, you wouldn't have even mentioned me, would you? You'd have said Ricardo.
No, I think we'd have mentioned
two
you on
others
the pod.
Dead.
We'd have mentioned you on the pod. But so then Thursday happened, like practice happened, which was a mess, which is where Beretta really can get stuck into it. Terribly handled. Let's just say that. It was terribly handled. It was so badly communicated, as in even fans waiting to CFP2 instead at silly o'clock in the cold outside, and then like 5 minutes before being told, actually, you've got to get out because of labour laws. And it's like, well, someone surely should have seen that coming earlier and at least have told them to leave or however it was. I've had a few people on Racer kind of write in being like, yeah, I was there just for this day or on that day, and the compensation of $200 of a voucher in the shop doesn't repay what they spent on being there for something they didn't get. So
yeah, because you really want a jumper of the Vegas Grand Prix when you didn't see a lap.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like the one thing you don't want.
So that was frustrating. But I think what was really good actually was the way it recovered after that, because it couldn't afford anything else to go wrong. Nothing else went wrong trackside. Like, the track was fixed and ran fine for FP2, fine for everything else. And in a sense, it's the time was the problem, because they probably took, an extra hour and a half, 2 hours, delaying FP2. Mm. But in that time, they got the track completely safe and fixed. So that's actually a rapid turnaround on the street circuit still. But
they'd run out of time.
Yeah, because it was the middle of the night. It was really weird. But after that, I thought, actually, what it served up was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it was quite a humbling experience for F1, because obviously they're the promoter for that event. And often, when things go wrong, I think F1's happy to kind of, to us privately in the media, kind of deflect the blame towards the promoter or to the FIA or both and say, well, it's on them. Whereas there, it was like, well, this is very much like, this is something that usually, if that happened, yes, you'd have shaded it towards the FIA, but the promoter would have got some flack from you as well. So I thought that was interesting. But also, what is also standout from that is that I think we can make those things a really big deal in the media because we're there. I think 95% of people that woke up on Sunday, watched the race, didn't give a damn that Friday was delayed because they didn't watch it. They just saw the good race, and it was fantastic. I think probably the race of the year. That saved any, residual. And Lawrence Edmondson, my colleague at ESPN, wrote a great piece on how, Vegas kind of turned things around and how basically the end product just did away with any negative headlines you could have, at the end of that day. So as much as it was a big thing, and I think you're completely right, Meds, but It's funny, isn't it? We can get in a little bubble of like, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened. This is a shambles. Yeah. And we were all like that on Thursday. It did feel like the biggest thing ever. You get to Sunday and you look back at it 48 hours later and you're like, yeah, I mean, they came through it okay. Like, it wasn't, if you were there, it sucked. if you were at home and you weren't watching practice, because let's be honest, I don't think the practice viewing figures are very good. No one really cared.
Well, you'd just woken up and you'd have seen that FP2 happened and you'd have seen roughly where everything was. Yeah. You wouldn't have known about all of the delays. You wouldn't have been sat there in the cold waiting for trying to find out whether or not you were going to see it or not. And then you would have watched qualifying and that was pretty cool. And then you would have seen the race. And like you said, both have said, it was a great Grand Prix. It looked great on telly. The racing was exciting. So you wouldn't have got it. And actually, you probably watched that thinking, I want to go to Vegas next year. It's probably what you've done when you've watched that race.
On the race, yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. It's something like Baku's done the same. Like, and you can't, it's where I feel bad for certain new venues and things. You can't legislate for the actual event you're going to get, like the track action. You can try and create a circuit layout that's going to encourage good racing and stuff, but you need like controversy, drama, incidents and all that stuff. And you can't guarantee that's going to happen. But if it does, some people view your event really positively and want to go. And if it doesn't, they don't. And yeah, you think of Baku, first year, dull as anything, the Grand Prix. And everyone's like, yeah, why are we racing in Baku? This is rubbish. Next 2 years are crazy. And everyone's like, it's like got this cult status as a race. Since, it's been pretty 50-50, hit and miss, whether it's good or bad race. But people still look at it like Baku's a great one and they look forward to it. Now, Vegas kind of, next year, people will look forward to that race because of what we got. No guarantees we'll get the same thing, but it that's the bit that kind of, dare I say, saved it, wasn't it?
The event will be better next year, though, won't it? They'll learn tons of lessons from this year. It was the first event. They pulled it together pretty quickly. And like you were saying about Baku, like lots of street circuits have problems, don't they, in the first year? And you mentioned, they got on top of it pretty quickly. So I think everyone will kind of look back on it with rose-tinted glasses because of the way that it ended. And I think we'll head back there and it'll be the start of a triple header, isn't it, before Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Yeah. And I think there'll be a lot of excitement for it again.
I think that's the point that actually I'm underwhelmed about next year is not Vegas. It's the fact that it's the start of a triple header and that it's Qatar and Abu Dhabi, isn't it, after. Now, if the championship is still alive then great. Everything falls by the wayside. But this year especially, I know that there's like this insistence in F1 to be like, oh, it was still a great season, great race for second. One of the worst seasons I've covered as a journalist in terms of the championship. I don't know if you guys feel the same, but it was dull, predictable. We had some good races along the way, but we knew in the middle of October that Max had won the championship. That part of it, that was the only thing missing, was that it was kind of, as with the other races around it, it just didn't, in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really matter. And you knew Max was going to win it eventually. I know there was some jeopardy at the end, but you know, it was like, Max is still going to win this bloody thing, isn't he? So, and that's no fault of F1's either. So if we get to a point next year where it's more competitive, I think that circuit will be perfect. You know, if there's some drama, if there's two guys going for the championship, you know, especially if the two cars are close, you've got that kind of Saudi 2021 vibe to it where there's a lot of places where you can go wheel to wheel with each other. Mm. So that part of it, I'm quite excited about. If it ever has the championship on the line or the championship's still running, that'll be a really cool place to go.
Great use of wheel to wheel, because that lets me tell another story, actually from Vegas, very briefly before we try and wrap, which was on the grid pre-race. I managed to interview live on, actually it was on the live pre-race show of SiriusXM, so it wasn't on the wheel to wheel show, but interviewed Rob McElhenney because he was there with Alpine.
That's very cool.
And in interviewing him, I said about how he's kind of done things at both ends of the spectrum with sport, because he'd gone for a lower league soccer team, football team. I never can tell who we should appease of our listeners, whether it should be your British listeners or our US-based ones. But so his Wrexham football team, they were non-league when they got involved with them. So, you know, five divisions below the top level, a long way from elite level football in the UK. And then you've got one of the 10 Formula One teams that you're also invested in. I'm like, that's two ends of the spectrum you're going with. Well, and when I mentioned Wrexham,
still mid-table, I'd say.
What, as Alpine?
Yeah.
But like, as in, there's only 10 you can pick from. So if you've got an F1, if you're involved in an F1 team, it's the highest level of motorsport or one-off. So then I was like, but with Wrexham, it's lower. And we were doing this interview about 10 days or 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks exactly before Wrexham played Yeovil in the FA Cup. But the main thing was actually, when I mentioned it, I did say, I was like, I'm actually a Yeovil fan, and Wrexham relegated my Yeovil team.
Unbelievable.
Like a few months before. And his eyes lit up at the mention of it, because it wasn't just you're involved with Wrexham, talk about it. It was like, oh, you get it. Like you're in that, like you're used to this. You understand probably why actually we're now hooked on it and this sort of thing. Because it must be a hard sell for them to, like, you know, Premier League fans that why they're involved with Wrexham. But yeah, so I did this interview live and there was a section of it where he then started talking about, we're playing them in the FA Cup, we've got this. He said, I spoke to the manager and the owner a lot, great club. And I was the one who had to go, let's move it back to F1 and talk about why they were there. But yeah, that was cool to do. That was really cool.
Our friend at The Guardian, Giles Richards, one of his favourite bands is called Fight Milk, mm-hmm. which is a reference. I don't know if you guys have seen Always Sunny, but Fight Milk is a reference, like it's a thing that they come up with during the show. So he's walking on the grid and he'd said before, he's like, I've got to see Rob McElhenney and show him the shirt. And he was stood and he saw him, but he said Giles said McElhenney saw him before he'd had a chance to, and he pointed at the shirt and was like, Fight Milk. He's like, that's amazing. Where'd you get it? And he said, oh, it's what type of music is it? It's like a rock band of
like
some
punk or whatever,
punk
yeah,
rock
maybe.
Band or something. It's like kind of smallish band. And he was telling him about it, and he said the same thing. He says, eyes lit up, and he's like, that's amazing. And Giles says, can I get a picture with you? And he was like, yeah, of course you can. You know,
and guess who took that picture?
That was you. That was before you were.
This is the point. I was trying to do the interview. I'm like live trying to like segue into asking a question, and like I'm talking. And Gilo had come over and started chatting to him. And I'm like, I need to interrupt this kind of, well, not interrupt it, but like, you've now made my job a lot harder because I need to wait for this to end before I can then ask a question. I'm not going to just say, oi, Gilo, get out of the way.
Yeah. You could have done the Kravitz kick that he did to you.
Well, this is it. So then he was trying to take the photo and he was kind of struggling with it. And I was like, this will end much more quickly if I help to take it. So I kind of threw back to the guys in the studio and offered to take the photo, took it, and then said, oh, and I've now got Rob McElhenney. So yeah, that I jumped on that chat as well. But yeah, he was so happy. What a pro.
It's almost like you've been doing this for ages, yeah.
I would have fumbled the phone, dropped that, smashed up. Said, and we've now got, and Rob McElhenney would have walked on. God. Like, we've got no one here. Back
so
to you.
Still me.
Yeah, still me. I've had no interviews so far.
Well, seeing as in this episode, we've had very little from Mr. Barreto, and we have gone for quite a long time, I'm going to do not a Nate-esque 60-second review, but I'm going to do a very brief summation of my Abu Dhabi Grand Prix before we find out something cool that Barreto did recently.
I think it's 60 seconds. No, I'm going to time it.
Well, you can try it now, but I'll just start talking. So
yeah, okay.
In Abu Dhabi, firstly, what was also called was a grid interview with, I've already forgotten the guy's name. Who was the really famous Marvel actor or actor that was Thor?
Oh, come Hemsworth.
On. Hemsworth.
Also played James Hunt famously, more famously than that in a race.
Fortunately, I was when I forgot his name, I'm like, I'm just going to edit this and cut that out and be like,
too late now.
Okay, fine. So yeah, Chris Hemsworth interviewed him on the grid, and that was very cool. I did have to get barged out of the way by Martin Brundle for them to interview him with Sky as well afterwards, but I'd just seen him and just said, do you mind? And he was walking to the front to do another interview, so I was like, yeah, as long as it's quick.
You got in first.
So yeah, I got in there. That was cool. He's a tall guy. But that was really nice, and that was kind of a cool way to end it, when it's always more fun when you get people that you wouldn't normally get to speak to. So that was fun. And then that came after Thursday night, won a karting race, which should mean that I get to drive a Formula One car next year.
Which is very cool.
I mean, as prizes go for quizzes or events or media things that we do,
yeah.
Like that is skyrocketingly high.
I won a McLaren quiz once, and I'm pretty sure I got like a bottle opener.
You would have got more than that.
No. I don't want to throw shade at McLaren because their quizzes are great. But I remember I got like, that was third place. We got a small thing. Explain quickly why that would end up in a F1 test. Just so people don't think that randomly there's a kart race that...
Oh, yeah.
So it's Alpine did like a media karting championship all year. So they did four rounds. Did one in Bahrain, one in Spa, one in Qatar, and one in Abu Dhabi. And the Abu Dhabi one was like, they did the same last year as well, where you do you qualify, then you do a reverse grid race, and then you do a full race. So it's kind of five races across the year. And they add up the points, F1 style, and the champion gets the chance to drive. They've got like, I think it's the 2012 Lotus car that they run as like a F1 experience thing at Paul Ricard, and waiting to see if that's actually going to be the prize because it's not been fully confirmed yet. So me saying this publicly is partly to put pressure on Alpine. That's what I'm doing right now. But they did it last year and I finished second to Stefan Cox, who is a very quick... She was a pundit for Dutch TV, but also races herself. And I think she wasn't a pundit this year because she went back to full-time racing.
Oh,
so
wow.
She won it and did do the driving experience, and they did like a film around it on Viaplay. So I think I'll have to tweet the hell out of it if I get the chance. But yeah, we'll give it a load of coverage, and I will tell you all what it's like if I get to drive one.
You should, yeah. I mean, that was the sell. So I mean, even I took part in Qatar. I was pretty slow, But like, yeah,
you were competitive. You were racing people.
I was racing in the, but I was in the lower heat. I was in the second heat. But yeah, I mean, yeah. that's what they sold to you. Where did Stéphane Cox do hers?
That was the Paul Ricard experience. Paul Ricard. Yeah, yeah.
As much as that circuit sucked ass, let's be honest with you, it would be great to test on because you could just keep making mistakes.
It's a brilliant test track. And it's still a good track, I think, to drive in isolation. It just didn't make for great racing, but you don't get to a race. So, yeah. And I mean, mate, I could drive anything anywhere. If I got to sit in an F1 car and drive it out of a garage and not crash it into the pit wall, that would probably be the highlight of my life.
Oh my God, after getting married, so and all cool. That. So,
it will be very be cool. So cool. I mean, you'll be unbearable for weeks after it, but I would be as well.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll and allow before. It.
To be honest, yeah, either side of it, just for months,
yeah,
years.
The only time I'd be bearable, I think, is while I was doing it, because you'd see I'd be absolutely shitting myself.
Yeah,
but apart from that.
Yeah.
Now, Barreto, Nate and I have talked a lot in this episode.
We have. Yeah, the floor should be yours for like 5 minutes.
I do enjoy listening to you guys talk, so, and I've said a few things.
You've said literally a few things.
And, you know, I'm just here to just control you two.
Vegas, final night, one big on blackjack.
He did.
How did you get on, Nate, with your gambling?
I did terribly. So I was on the same blackjack table. Don't gamble, kids. I joined a blackjack table with Madders. I put like 120 down, I think, 125 down, which is a lot of money, but it's not, when you're in Vegas, like everyone's betting bigger than that. But that, the table we're at, that was five hands of blackjack. I lost all of them.
And
because I was the first one, it was deal, you know, and I had the guys next to me were kind of saying, like, yeah, you should stick or do the other one. this is probably why I lost all the money. And so me being there, I think, was helping these guys. But it's that's the crazy thing with Vegas is you just go down so quickly and you can see so easily how. Because in my head there was like a little, you know in the cartoons you have like good angel, bad demon on your shoulder. The good one was saying, "All right, that's why you don't gamble." The bad one was like, "Yeah, but you know, look at Meadows. He's winning loads down there. If you just put 100, he put more money down originally from you. That's why." And I was like, yeah, that might be it. And I was like, no. So I had to get up and be like, I'm gonna go get a drink. Who wants a drink? Like, just to get myself off the table. Because yeah. So and that's the one thing with Vegas is you do see a lot of people around. You're like, I wonder how long those people have been sat around for. But it's not all bad. Meadows did win big.
But I did exactly like you said. I lost at the same rate as you, but I had some more, and I was like, do I go back in with what I'd like kept to play with? I was like, yeah, I will. And then that one also, false economy, because Nate then got up and bought everyone around that was damn expensive, and if he just sat at the table, kept playing, you get it for free. But
that's also true, yeah.
But so. Mr. Barreto, did you get to gamble at all? Did you take any risks?
No, I did not have a flutter for sensible the whole man. Time that I was there. When I went to Vegas 18 months previously and did that film, and I had a go, and gambling is not for me. I'm very risk averse.
The man that wears such bright colours all the time.
I don't consider that.
I don't know if
risk.
I'd like to be on a table with Barreto wearing this, because I just keep looking at you, being like, "God damn, that looks nice." And then I'd be like, "What do you mean?" And then the roulette table would be spinning, and I'd be like, "Ah," and all my numbers would come up, and I'd be like, "I was looking at his shirt." You know, maybe
blame me. You blame me for your defeats.
Yeah, I would.
That's what we did on that Sunday night, because you weren't there.
Yeah.
No, but I was with you guys on one night, and you both were winning when I was there.
That's when I put, so that was a slightly different night. That's when I put like $20 on an electric roulette table.
Yeah.
We were going to wrap this up, but I was actually, I kept thinking of things I wanted to add. But Mr. Barreto, you've done something very cool since the season's ended. If you've done something cool since not gambling in Vegas, please enlighten us. But otherwise, what have you done most recently?
So most recently, I've just got back from Venice.
Nice.
In Italy. It was a beautiful
place. It's still
there,
is it?
It's still there. It hasn't sunk.
I like the way you were kind of clarifying between the Venetian in Vegas. It's like everyone who went on one of the gondolas.
But that was the advice I gave you, wasn't it? I did say to you before you went, I was like, be careful because it is sinking.
It is sinking, and yeah. And the water level is really high. It's going to be quite sad in a few generations' time when Venice might not be there. But so get there. Get to Venice now.
Greta Thunberg over here. Yeah.
Right. Let's return to the fact that I had a great time in Venice.
No, just clarify. It would be sad, actually, just to clarify.
Thanks, Nate.
The decline of our planet does make me sad.
Yeah, and to the good people of Venice, you know, Nate doesn't hate on your on your hometown. I was over there for Prema, a single-seater team, probably the most successful in junior formula history, their 40th anniversary. And they very kindly asked me to host their 40th anniversary celebrations. So they had a venue in their cruise terminal there, pretty cool space. And they invite all the drivers who had driven for the team over their 40-year history, because they've gone from karting all the way up to F2. So they've got quite a few single-seater series going, or they perform. They enter.
Compete,
there we go. And a number of series across the world. And so I just hosted this event. Jacques Villeneuve was there, Esteban Ocon was there, Robert Schwartzman.
Did you know Jacques Villeneuve got married recently?
newly married Jacques Villeneuve.
And Jacques Villeneuve was there with his wife, who he married in Vegas, which was nice. And everyone wore Splash of Red, because that's the colour of Prema. But it was just quite a cool event, because when you're on that occasion, everyone's relaxed, the season's over, everyone's in a really good mood. You're there to celebrate a pretty cool team. And the real overwhelming vibe that I got from it is what a family Prema is. Like, you can just see how close everyone is, how much love that they have for a team that helped them get to where they got to. Ryan Briscoe was there, Nicole's husband. He raced in IndyCar, won the Daytona 24 Hours, that started his career, really, single-seater career, with Prema. So there's a lot of like drivers there. When they talk about it, how emotional they get, it just means so much to them that Prema gave them the opportunity. And it was Angelo Rosin who started the team. He was there. Renault Rosin, his son, runs the team now. And when they talk about those guys, you can just see they treat them as like father figures, essentially. So it was just a really nice like atmosphere and like a really nice space to be in.
Who out of the F1 grid was there? Because obviously they've had like Charles and a few others.
So Charles couldn't make it, so he sent a video message. But Esteban Ocon was there.
Yay!
Lance Stroll couldn't make it.
Boo.
Mick Schumacher, I know he technically isn't on the grid at the moment, but is involved in Formula One, couldn't make it. He was on holiday. Boo. Robert Schwartzman could make it. He was there. Jacques Villeneuve, aforementioned.
Yay.
Not on the grid, but was a Formula One driver, was there.
There's a future Formula One driver that was there as well, wasn't there?
Oh, well, it depends who you think is going to make it into Formula One.
Well, I'm putting the pressure on you now to think, who was I suggesting?
Kimi Antonelli?
Mm.
Yeah, the big man.
Yeah, he was there. Really, really, really nice.
I was going to say, did you talk to him? So for people listening, Kimi Antonelli is a bit of a sensation. He's got like Max Verstappen vibes to him, hasn't he? He's this young kid. Italian?
No pressure, Kimi.
Great, great first name, because his name's Kimi. Yeah. And he's currently with Mercedes, is that
right?
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah.
And he's stepping up to F2 with Prema next
year.
It's a
big step, isn't it?
Yeah, because he's going from Formula Regional straight to F2.
So right now, there's almost no chat really globally about him. But if he comes in and does like a Lewis year, or like has like a Charles Leclerc year, you're talking about fast-tracking straight to...
Even just winning a few races. I don't know if he'll win a title, because his teammate's Ollie Bearman, who was there or not
the
there.
The Bearman.
You can't remember.
Was Bearman not there?
I didn't see him.
I might boo Barretto for that.
I didn't see him. Bearman,
boo. But if, yeah, Bearman's going to be, he's Kimi's teammate next year at Prema in F2. That looks like a heck of a lineup. That's going to be very entertaining to watch.
That'll be great.
But that might make it hard for Antonelli to win the title.
You rarely do in your first year. That's why if he does,
it'd be huge.
But also, just a quick aside,
mega
for Italy if Kimi Antonelli is.
Yeah, defo.
Because Italy just hasn't had a driver, like a superstar driver, for like literally, like we're talking decades since they've had one. So yeah, let's go. Team Kimi Antonelli.
Is this the new hype train?
Yeah, this is my new hype train. I don't think I've ever spoken to the kid or seen him race, but I've just heard everyone talk about him. So I'll jump on it. And I didn't jump on the Charles Leclerc hype train. And I feel like I should have done.
So does that mean you're going to be finding yourself in the F2 paddock a little bit more often next year?
I might have to discover where they are, yeah. I know they're somewhere, but I'll have to venture down there, make some contacts.
On his private jet.
But all in all, a pretty wicked weekend to end the year. And it meant that I couldn't attend another pretty cool event that Chris Medland did manage to. I don't know why I keep referred to as Chris Medland this podcast.
Full names.
Medis, you managed to go to.
Yeah, this is nearly our longest podcast ever, so I will keep it very brief, but went to Maranello to Fred Vasseur's like Christmas lunch, which was very cool because there was about 30 people, I think, media invited from across Europe, essentially. I don't think there was anyone outside Europe that was there. And a few Ferrari comms team members. But it was a massive circular table in Fiorano. So you were kind of looking out over, it was the same location where they launched the car at the start of the year. That was very cool. Again, that I put on TikTok at the time, so you can go and check my TikTok out. But so we had a view of Fiorano, but we couldn't film anything because there was a like a development GT3 car or something that was running. You had a great view, but we had a huge circular table, and it was big enough that in the middle of it was the 2023 car, like a show car was parked there. So yeah, one of the cooler settings for lunch. We'd actually the day before had a Red Bull lunch at the Royal Automobile Club in Mayfair with Christian Horner, where actually the final story of the pod will go tonight for this.
Well, I feel like you guys should also tell the story from your perspective.
But, well, let's let you tell it first.
So then we dashed from that to the airport at Heathrow and flew overnight, stayed in Bologna, went to this Maranello thing. And what was great was Fred spoke for over an hour on record. As much as it's like, oh, Christmas lunch, how fancy. And it was lovely and a long way to go for a nice lunch. But genuinely, like, it was really worth it from a work perspective. A lot of content we got, a lot of questions we could ask on the record and find out a lot of stuff. So that was very cool. Beautiful, crisp winter's day as well. It's lovely to be in that area. It's so atmospheric in Maranello. So got a tour as well. Saw the production, like the car line for the road cars that was mega. Saw those being built. So just a really cool day out, really, to end the year for me. But yeah, the highlight was the laugh I had the day before.
So yeah, let's just jump straight into it. So I made the biggest clanger of my career the day before. Actually, to be honest with you, it's pretty funny. But so the three of us were at it's a similar event, a Christmas lunch at the Royal Automobile Club in London with Christian Horner. Was what, 2 hours? Like we'd
at least,
there.
Yeah,
and it'd all been off record and eating and stuff, and nothing on record at that point.
And he was in great form, wasn't he?
Yeah, but no, but we did the on record bit. We did the on record bit, so that's when we put the phones in. And again, like Meta says, though, while it does sound fancy, like those events, even the off record stuff is really good because it colours your understanding of things that have happened. You say, "Well, this is what Red Bull think of this," and it helps you, you know. So it's all helpful. The on record stuff was good. Then we'll take the phones away, and Christian, in his very Christian kind of way. Now, there's dispute over exactly what he said. I thought he said, now, in your guys' opinion, who dropped the biggest bollock this year? But I was told reliably, and what he means by that is who messed up the biggest this year, right? Meadows then told me, because we went to watch some football on Saturday, that he said...
He just asked...
Out of you guys.
Yeah, he said... I don't even know if he said about you guys. He just said,
"So who dropped?
Come on then, like, be honest. Who dropped the biggest bollock this year?"
Yeah, so that is what he said.
Which,
he didn't say for you or in your opinion, and he didn't say out of you guys, admittedly. So there was a bit of open to ambiguity.
It was open. That was the point I was making. But it was open to clarify.
Let's say that I understood it to be of the people around the table now, as we wrap up, like who screwed up the most? Who did the funniest, stupidest?
Did you think he meant?
And I'm really sorry, Nate, but yeah, I kind of just because he was looking around, asking, well, kind of, because he is interested in what we're up to. So rather than what Nate thought,
I'm still cringing about what I said. And then Luke Smith has told me that he knew exactly what Christian meant. So it does sound like I was very much in. And Lawrence Edmondson was sat next to me.
He said it was 50-50. He said,
And I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, so you know. Maybe I just misheard him. There's a tiny silence.
There was, yeah. You broke the silence.
And I was like, well, to be honest, probably Checo. Another silence. And Luke Smith's like giggling next to me. And Horner's just looking straight at me. And God bless Lawrence Edmondson. He then saves me by saying, he means us out of us lot.
Yeah.
And then Edmondson said, well, probably Nate now. But Meadows has a good one as well. And then you told a story about earlier in the year. I thought that was pretty embarrassing. And then you guys all went from there to the airport to go to Maranello, you, Luke, and Lawrence. And we have a group chat between us. And I think it was Luke put in there. He put at Nate. He was like, Nate, just out of interest, who do you think dropped the biggest bollock this year? And that's when I realized, I was like, oh shit, they're probably just sat laughing about it there. And I was with Ben Hunt. We went to have a drink. And I said, I was like, that was pretty funny. And he was like, yeah, I was laughing at that myself. And he was behind Christian, like looking away. So he said him and Phil looked at each other like, ha, ha, ha. So, you know, I'm happy to take it though. If that hadn't been me, I'd have been the first person having a laugh about it and making fun of the person. So it was pretty damn funny.
It was less making fun of you. It was just a hilarious moment because you misunderstood what he said. And then not only that, you went straight in all guns blazing with it being Checo.
Because the thing is, we hadn't talked about Checo Perez at any point during that day. And we hadn't had Christian really down our end of the table. So I was kind of like, maybe this is a playful way to start that chat. It obviously wasn't.
But you also brilliantly went hard. And then when everyone reacted as in, oh no, you've got it wrong, you then doubled down on it and were like, well, obviously it's Checo. Like, that's what was quite funny. What was quite funny about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh no.
Yeah, it was, I'll be honest with you. It, yeah, I at the time, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But and to be honest, and then Paul, again, to end on Paul Smith, he messaged me after just about something else. And I was like, oh, I dropped a bit of a clanger at the end. He was like, oh, mate, that was hilarious. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, no, like, everyone found it funny.
Yeah, everyone
so
found
as soon as he
funny,
said that,
and
I
it was
like,
great. Yeah. So it was a funny moment.
And that's what those events are for, isn't it? Stories. For and that's what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
Is for clangers that we've all made, ultimately. That is a good one to finish on.
So I think so. And we should end on a high point after your joke right at the start, mate.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I feel like I've redeemed
myself.
It
around. It took you a whole hour to do it, but you turned it around.
Well, thanks everyone for sticking with us to redeem ourselves.
Yes, thank you very much. For anyone who is still listening, thanks very much. You can, of course, follow us on our social channels at The Paddock. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Meadows' work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com, and we will do this again very, very soon.
Very soon.
Very soon.
Very soon.
Oh.